from WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Ratia Murphy with your WSLR news headlines for Tuesday, July 7th. Governor Ron DeSantis has signed Florida's new state budget. It restores much of the arts funding that was cut last year. About $20 million will go to arts and cultural organizations across the state. But the governor also used his line item veto power to cut more than $3 million from smaller nonprofits, artists, and special projects. Here on the Sun Coast, one of the biggest losses is Venice Theater. A $250,000 appropriation was vetoed. The money would have helped turn the theater's temporary Raymond Center into a permanent education facility, as rebuilding continues after Hurricane Ian damaged the historic Gervais Theater in 2022. 8 Sarasota County arts organizations are receiving state funding this year. Nearly 20 others, including Sarasota Orchestra, Sarasota Opera, West Coast Black Theater Troupe, and Venice Theater, are still waiting to learn if they'll receive money from a separate $7.5 million grant pool. Longboat Key could make it easier for homeowners to raise older homes above flood level. Town leaders are considering changes to the building code. The move follows about 30 applications from homeowners after the destructive 2024 hurricane season. Officials say homes built to newer FEMA code standards held up much better during recent storms. Older homes often face expensive permitting hurdles. Those include setback rules, lot coverage limits, and utility requirements. Raising a home can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. Supporters say updating the code would remove some of those barriers. The proposal now heads back to the town commission for more discussion. Higher education leaders and immigration advocates are criticizing Florida's new ban on undocumented students attending the state's public colleges. The rule was approved last week by the Florida Board of Education. It requires students enrolling in Florida's 28 public colleges and adult education programs to prove they are either U.S. citizens or lawfully present in the country. The Florida Board of Governors is now considering a similar policy for the state's public universities. Opponents say the Board of Education exceeded its legal authority because the legislature never approved the restriction. They also warned the policy could reduce college enrollment and make it harder to meet Florida's future workforce needs. It's still unclear whether the rule will apply to current students. Questions also remain about DACA recipients, people with temporary protected status, and those with pending asylum claims. This has been Ratia Murphy with your WSLR news headlines for Tuesday, July 7th.
You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV 100.1 FM in Bradenton.
This is show 91 of our changing environment. The previous show is Melody Matrix, hosted by Neil.
I'm Julie Morris.
I'm John O'Miller, and the show is being recorded and broadcast on July 7th, 2026.
Today we are going to be talking with Kelly Bauman, a leader of a group of citizens challenging the extension and widening of Manasota Beach Road.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or volunteers.
Kelly, tell us about your background.
Well, thank you for having me today. I grew up in Orlando in Winter Haven, so many years of my youth spent there in Central Florida. My father was worked for Lawyers Title Insurance Corporation, and we moved there when I was two. Mm-hmm. So we grew up in the Central, hot Florida, and really enjoyed it. But then I spent many adult years in Maryland, working with many government entities, federal entities, engineers, writing specifications for equipment for very large facilities within government, federal, around a five-state area. So several years went by, ended up back down here, which was my goal. And also, Sarasota County was my client. Mm-hmm. So I did government contracts for them, including GSA contracts. So very familiar with the background of contracts and engineers, and contractors.
And so you live down in the Englewood area?
That's where I live, yes.
At the Sarasota Englewood, not the Charlotte County Englewood.
That's correct, Sarasota county line.
Yeah, we have so many communities in Sarasota that are split. Longboat Key is half and half. We've got the city of Sarasota that's, you know, the north end of Siesta Key is half in the city and the south end is not. And Old Myakka is just about in Manatee County. So a lot of, so how long did it take you to get up here this morning?
About 45 minutes.
Yeah. So we have a, you know, we like to brag that we have a 35 miles of beaches. But most of those, we have some famous beaches like Lido and Siesta Key Beach, but for the most part, our beaches are hard for the general public to get to. And so we've got a situation in the South County. I guess the most extreme example, you're all familiar with Port Charlotte. Port Charlotte is the part of what was originally going to be called North Port Charlotte. Port Charlotte's in the Charlotte County below Northport. So it's on the east side of the Myakka River. And they thought it was so important to be able to feature beach access when they were marketing this area that was east of the Myakka River, that they figured out a way to have some land on the Gulf of Mexico called Port Charlotte Beach State Park. So even though there's no easy way to get there, and it's not contiguous in any way, shape, or form with Port Charlotte, they can write a brochure that says, you know, why don't you move to Port Charlotte and you can visit Port Charlotte State Beach. So the allure of having a beach associated with your development in this region is very powerful. Maybe you could talk about that.
Well, sure. So from our understanding, it's been going on quite a while. For Welland Park and the area over there to have beach access. And we know that it's been advertised that way for a long time. And we get it. And, you know, I moved back to the West Coast for a reason, but within close proximity. And that was important to me. I don't go as often as I would like because it is so busy.
Right.
There's no parking. Yeah.
So I looked on the aerial photographs and, well, first let me clarify one thing, because I think a bunch of our listeners, if they're, unless they're listening online, a bunch of our listeners are North County people or Manatee County people. And when you hear the word Minnesota Beach Road, you assume it's like Gulf of Mexico Drive on Longboat Key. If it's Minnesota Beach Road, surely it's a long road that runs along Minnesota Beach, but it's not. It actually runs basically perpendicular to the beach. It runs east and west. And so I looked at an aerial photograph. I went on Google Earth and printed out a sheet and just started circling every 10 parking spaces. And if you don't count the boat trailer parking, there's only about 330 spaces there.
Yes.
So when you think about how many people live in the South County and how limited the options are, so you could go down into Charlotte County and go to Englewood Beach. You used to be able to go to Stump Pass, but then Milton Pass opened. I don't think there's any parking down there.
No.
Casperson Beach, you can walk to Casperson Beach, but you can't drive there anymore. So if you're talking about South County, south of Sharkies, the beach opportunities right now are really limited, and there's a lot of pressure. And because beachfront property is so expensive, it's unlikely that Sarasota County will ever acquire a lot more public beachfront in the South County. So it would be interesting. It's possible that the county actually has figures about how rapidly that parking lot at Minnesota Beach fills up. But essentially luring more people to drive over there only to find that there won't be any parking seems problematic.
Yes, and especially being a barrier island. We really, I mean, there's coastal laws in place to protect the barrier islands. And I'm sure the county doesn't feel like they're talking about funneling people
yes.
to the beach.
And the Minnesota Key people are very protective. They are not
yes.
interested in a lot of strangers wandering around on their island or even, you know, the county has tried to acquire additional land just for preserves and gotten pushback from the folks in Minnesota Key. And the key there, this is a key, I guess, like Casey Key. These are very narrow, or I guess you could almost say scrawny keys. They're not, it's not like Siesta Key that has a really wide part to it.
Right.
So, yeah, there are places where it's only like 300 feet across the island. And so there isn't a lot of place, even if we were able to buy more lots, there's not a lot of space for parking.
Or beachfront.
Yeah.
Right.
So right now, let's talk a little just to set the geography up for people. So we don't know if you've ever been to Minnesota Beach Park, but we just talked about there's a boat ramp and parking for trailers, and then there's parking for cars. But to get there, you have to go on a two-lane road and through some zigzags. And there's a left turn and a right turn, and so if you come off of 776 and turn west, that would be where the Minnesota Scrub Preserve is. But if you were to turn east at that junction, then you would be on Minnesota Beach Road, right?
No, it would be East Minnesota
Beach. East Minnesota Beach Road, right. So it's east of 776, but it's west of the part that developers would like to extend.
So, Kelly, how do you use your property, and how much property do you have on Minnesota Beach Road?
It's OUE1.
Okay.
And we have just under 10 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have bees, we have cattle, we have chickens and roosters and peacocks and
wow.
cats and dogs. So
what breed of chickens do you have?
Oh, I'm not that good.
That's someone else's department.
Yes.
Okay. But we have peacocks in our neighborhood, and we work to get backyard chickens legalized. But when you have 10 acres, it's not a backyard chicken situation.
Correct.
So
yeah.
You've really moved there for a more rural experience.
Yes.
And what, for the section of the East Minnesota Beach Road that you're on, how would you describe the road? How wide is it and what's it like?
Oh, it might be 17 feet wide. I mean, it's an old dirt road, old
okay.
Florida.
Okay.
It's beautiful, and we like it because it's away and off the beaten path.
Okay.
And, we might say a bunch of Florida rednecks back
yeah,
there
yeah.
with no offense taken.
So you have a 17 or maybe 20-foot wide dirt road, and how is that being proposed to change? What would it be like after?
The proposal is 150 feet wide.
Okay. So that must be a 6-lane highway, right?
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
That's two lanes, a median, a MRT, which is a multi-use recreational trail, a bike path, and a sidewalk.
Okay, so this would require the county. This is part of the question, I guess. Does the county already have 150 feet of land in which to put this road?
We still have questions about our easement. It's our only ingress and egress.
Okay.
So we have questions that we will continue to challenge on that. So they would have to take over our easement and head east then a little. They propose to run to the northeast and behind Sarasota National. There is a right-of-way there that's part of Sarasota National that they need.
Okay. So, but when I think, and I don't have a legal background, when I think of right-of-way, I usually assume there's an underlying property ownership, and then the right-of-way is a right that's granted to users. Am I wrong about that?
I don't have a legal background
okay.
either.
Okay.
What we know is that on our title work,
yeah.
all our paperwork says with an instrument number that's recorded by the clerk's office, that it's a private, we have a private road maintenance agreement.
Okay.
So all of the residents on that dirt road have been maintaining that road for many years. So I'm not sure how the county can file an instrument, record a document that says a private road maintenance agreement. And with the language in there, it says a private road in Englewood, Florida, and gives a very legal description
right.
of that road.
Okay.
So even our title paperwork says that the road is undetermined, like on our survey.
Oh.
So there's been questions for a very long time.
Yeah.
So in my experience with contracts and stuff, I feel like there's a technicality here.
All right. Worth pursuing. So the basic concept is the Welland Park they're interested in making it easier for Welland Park residents to get to the beach. Is that fair?
That's what they have proposed and advertised.
Okay, yes. But there used to be another approach, which was Keyway Road.
Yes, Keyway is actually a public road.
Okay.
And that has been on the books for, like, as they say, for many years.
Okay.
And on the thoroughfare plan, you see both roads. Obviously, a thoroughfare plan is a good idea. It's an idea.
Yeah.
That is not a resolution.
No.
So.
Right. We're experiencing that right now with the Hawkins Ranch, which is immediately to the west of the lower Miaka Lake Wilderness area. And the county had shown a major road going through the Hawkins Ranch.
Yes, a nice diagonal.
Yeah. And so when you question the county about that, the answer seems to be, well, we needed to anticipate or prepare for the possibility that it would be developed. But you can't. They don't have a similar plan for the possibility that it might be preserved. So it's sort of a one-way thinking that we need to prepare the eventuality that development might take place, but we're not likely to prepare for the eventuality that things would remain as they are or be preserved.
Well, I would ask, where are the developments nearby?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so is it just Pat Neal, or is there a bigger group of powerful people pushing to make this happen?
Well, within Welland Park, there's West Villages Improvement District, and there's multiple builders in there.
Okay.
Our concern, or our, I guess, contention, because the whole project was proposed as an unsolicited PPP, which is a public-private partnership. And I guess that might be subjective as far as what the benefit is to the public, and the commissioners make that decision, a very subjective decision, because the people that are severely impacted by the approval basically have no say. There are many developments within Welland Park that Pat Neal is building in,
mm-hmm.
and their advertisements say so, you know, and advertise beach access, as well as the Boca Royale East. So recently one of our attorney friends went in to the Boca Royale, just into their sales department, and they promptly explained how within 5 minutes they could be on Manasota Beach Road and to the beach. So even from the east side of Boca Royale, there's access.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of concerns on how this was proposed and who really benefits.
And when did you and your neighbors find out about this?
A few of my neighbors were aware prior to me. I lost my son in June, and then I received a email in July and told us about the meeting in August. So we've been fighting since August 27th.
Okay.
And there's an earlier date in April 2025. Is that right?
That's right. So The first presentation by Pat Neal was April 23rd. That's when he presented and also asked for the board to make a motion to remove Kiway. So all in one false swoop, you know, he put his request on the table, and it's on the thoroughfare plan, which people feel like this is concrete. But yeah. Then we have a developer asking for it to be removed. So April 23rd was the first presentation, and then August 27th was their decision, their presentation and decision. They only needed 14 days to publicize, and then they made this decision on the 27th. And at that time, they had to make a motion to agree to the proposal with the PPP agreement, and then they had to make the capital improvement funds, and then they chose to move the $15 million from River Road to this road. So that's impact fees and mobility fees that were supposed to go to River Road.
Wow. So were many of your neighbors able to participate in those early meetings?
Yeah, the very first meeting, several of us were there, and we experienced grave flooding, yes, with Ian, but right after Beach Walk was built. So we had never seen flooding to that extent, and we came with pictures and evidence and concerns from our end to the beginning of East Minnesota Beach Road and the flooding. There was 3 feet of water on the side street of East Minnesota Beach Road before you even get to Beach Walk. So there's Fort Creek. There's a Fort Creek floodplain.
Yeah.
It's just not doing its job with all this, with all the development.
Right.
And bringing in a 150-foot road by 2 miles isn't going to help that.
Right, and so we should explain, it's not simply, I mean, you mentioned living on a dirt road, but it's not simply that there's a dirt road that connects Welland Park to 776. It's that there's a whole big section where there's no road whatsoever, right? They would have to put in a new road, and I guess, so there's a question, what's the underlying ownership there? Do we know?
Yes, so that property was Taylor Ranch.
Uh-huh.
They sold to Sarasota National.
Yeah.
And then Sarasota National did an interlocal agreement with the county in 2018.
Yeah. So when you think about the space between the Myakka River and the coast, at some point, we start calling that the Cape Hayes Peninsula. I guess everybody, you can draw your own line. But at one point, a large percentage of it was owned by the Vanderbilts, and they had a ranch there. And then I remember there was the Berry Ranch, and we were told the Berry Ranch would always be a ranch. And then the Taylors bought the Berry Ranch, and we were told that a Taylor Ranch would always be a ranch. And we know what happens to ranches in Sarasota. They become
subdivisions.
They keep
residential.
The ranch name, right?
Yeah, and then they.
So Palmer Ranch and Lakewood Ranch and all these places that are
these fancy ranches
that are not ranches are called ranches because at one point they were ranches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it would involve not just widening. Like the point I'm making is, it's not just widening an existing road. It would actually be punching through 150-foot wide right-of-way through an undeveloped area.
It equates to 24 acres of medium density.
So the county, if I understand what you're saying, the appeal to the county was that either Pat Neal or other interests would be putting money towards the project. So instead of the county having to pay for the whole thing, they'd be helping to subsidize, the developers would be subsidizing it?
Well, actually, the PPP outlines that it has to be more economical for the developer or the road builder to do the project than the county itself.
Oh.
So it's not really that he's funding it.
Okay.
He does present the vehicle for funds, you know, the impact fees, mobility fees. But he just has to present that it's more economical for him to do it than the county, you know, projects.
Okay, so sounds like the concept behind this PPP stuff is that if someone can demonstrate they can do something cheaper than the county could and the county was planning to do it anyway, then they should let the person who can do it more cheaply do it. Is that fair?
That's the idea.
Okay.
There's a few other stipulations, but he is, you know, one is to demonstrate that.
Well, so part of the question is, well, then why is it so much more expensive for the government to get something done than the private parties? So,
I think that's a good question.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we do have an email from our public records request that shows pretty much the same number that the county uses as their, you know, high number from John Lazewski.
Okay.
And so we have that email train showing that figure, and now it's within the documents that it won't be 20,000. We can get it done for, you know, six million or 20 million. We can get it done, you know, for 6 million less.
Wow.
So that's 15 million and not to exceed. However, and this is a funny contract piece, but there's two opportunities for them to come back to the board to, you know, gather more money for improvements toward the intersection at 776 and Manasota Beach Road and down at Sarasota National. And to my understanding, that's a 30% contingency that's in there, which is quite a chunk of money.
Now, Sarasota National is way in the east on the other side of where the road doesn't exist now. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the connecting point behind Sarasota National.
And if you go on Google Earth Street View, you can go around and get to a roundabout, and then the road stops. But it's clear what the intention is to keep going west. Yeah.
Yes. We might want to say the name of that road over there.
Yeah. Well, Manasota Beach Road. Yeah.
Manasota to East Manasota to Manasota.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot in the naming.
So I'm going to reintroduce our guest. She's Kelly Bauman, the leader of a group of citizens challenging the extension and widening of Manasota Beach Road. And then this summer through July 30th, the Sarasota African American Cultural Coalition and the Leonard Reed House will be hosting children's summer enrichment workshops on Tuesday and Thursday morning from 10 a.m. until noon. The workshops are a fun and engaging mix of art, dance, and history. School-age children are welcome to attend so they can create and explore in a welcoming, interactive environment. All children must be accompanied by an adult. More information is available at saacc.org or by calling 941-9419-0454.
You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV 100.1 FM in Bradenton. And, you know, Fogartyville is going to be opening back up. It's been upgraded Sunday, July 12th at 7 p.m. Remy Good, indie folk artist who specializes in nylon string guitar. And then Fogartyville is especially wanting to promote the candidate forum for the Sarasota County Commission. That's going to be Tuesday, July 14th at 6 p.m., and that's going to be a live broadcast. So you can tune in on Tuesday the 14th and hear the five different candidates for the county commission, and I'll do one more, which is July 17th and July 18th at 8 p.m., the Selwyn Birchwood Band Virtuoso returns for two nights of, and I quote, electric swamp funkin' blues. So be sure and check out Fogartyville.
So your group is challenging these decisions by Sarasota County, right?
Yes.
Okay. And so tell us more about that.
Well, they approved the PPP by Pat Neal to the Economic Stimulus Working Group. He's the only one left in the group, but that's the group that is doing the construction and managing the project, I should say. And yes, there's several of us that have been showing up since August in opposition. We're not talking about stop developing. We're talking about there's many things that we see that are just not right about the project and the contract and so forth.
So are those primarily procedural? How would you characterize the things that seem off base?
Well, for one, we on the most impacted people,
yes,
right, on the East Manasota Beach Road stretch, the
right
road that they want to take over,
right,
we're not notified.
Okay. Well, that seems like an issue.
It does.
Yeah.
It's fun, though, because it's a road, and on Stantec's engineering document, they have a big arrow on their front page that points to the project location being right behind Sarasota National. So I think in their mind that, hey, we can notify a ring of people, right? But it's a road.
Oh, so let me see if I get the drift of what you're saying. When certain projects are being proposed, there's an obligation of the county, or if there's going to be a hearing, to notify neighbors within a certain distance.
That's
and
correct.
Instead of picking a line that would encompass the entire stretch because they would be making it 150 feet wide all the way to 776, right?
To what is existing hard road.
Okay, so from the end of the hard road all the way to the east, instead of a line and then notifying people within a certain distance of that line, they picked a point, and then they notified people a certain distance from a single point.
That's what it appears.
Yeah.
And so we also have conflicting information about that distance. I was told by Spencer Anderson on a call with Stantec and some of our other people on in our group that the notification was 200 feet.
Okay.
I have an email from Commissioner Mass saying that it's 750 feet.
Mm.
And then we were told by Pat Neal it was 500 feet.
Okay.
So Spencer Anderson on that call with the engineer, he said, no, we were not notified.
Uh-huh.
He also, our front acreage does not have a home on it.
Okay.
It does happen to be owned by the same people that are on the back 5 acres.
Yeah, yeah.
And his claim was that, well, we didn't know who owned the property. So I thought that was great by our chief engineer of our county.
It seems like the property appraiser should be able to straighten that one out. Okay.
So we have the notification concern.
So am I understanding then that the MRT, the multi-use recreational trail, the sidewalk, and the bike lane would not extend all the way to 776?
They would. I don't know how they plan to change the traffic at that point.
Transition?
Yeah. I really don't. It doesn't seem very feasible because as you end where the dirt road is now,
right,
that's the back entrance of Beach Walk.
Okay.
So we have construction traffic coming in there because they're continuing to build.
And that's to the south, am I right?
Just south.
Okay.
Yep. And there's a sidewalk on one side. So I'm not sure where all this commotion's going to properly transition.
So west of 776, it's a two-lane road.
Two-lane road.
Yeah.
No bike path.
Right, right.
No, nothing.
Yeah.
So sort of seducing people into thinking there's this great recreational trail and a sidewalk and a bike lane, and if you get on it, you'll be propelling yourself west to the beach. Then when you get to 776, there's a rude awakening that none of that is persisting, and you've got to compete with two-lane residential car traffic. And some of that, my recollection of it is it was faster than I thought it would be.
It is. We don't bike it. It's not a kind road, you know. It's a two-lane, fast-moving road.
Yeah.
It's a dirt road, right?
No.
On to the west is just a two-lane road.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's paved.
Through residents, and like I say, with several turns. I think it's, you know, I don't think the county builds two-lane roads anymore. I mean, technically this is a two-lane road, but it's not a 20-foot road. It's a 150-foot wide road. And that's going to take, so there would have to be a condemnation or eminent domain proceeding against your property, wouldn't there? Or do you think the right-of-way is 150 feet there?
So that proper where the dirt road is, which is approximately 17 to 20 feet.
Okay.
So it does lie outside of our properties, looking back on the old maps, which we acknowledge.
Okay.
It is our only ingress egress.
Right.
But it, as again I said, we have the private road maintenance agreement.
Yes.
So there just seems to be conflicts on these documents.
Yeah.
Right? How does one end and one take over without notifying the residents who live on this dirt road, their only ingress, egress?
Yeah.
There's lots of concern.
Well, and just the whole, if they don't develop Keyway, then it sounds like all of Welland Park that's trying to reach the a beach would be funneled through this system and inserted into the west of 76 situation, which is this two-lane road through residential neighborhoods.
Yes, 21,000 cars a day.
Yeah.
So how does Sarasota National influence this whole decision?
Well, in my research in following the ERP, which is the Environmental Resource Permit that the county and the developer need to put the road through, because the road goes through, you know, wetlands and a mesic hammock.
Forked Creek, yeah.
Yeah, so there's, you know, lots of requirements, but as I followed that, I noticed a document with a request for information, and within that, it appeared that they needed more wetland or environmental credits. And so we now have a co-applicant for the ERP, which is the Sarasota National CDD. So, in my mind,
what is CDD?
That is a community development district.
Okay.
So a lot of these new communities have districts that manage not the homeowners and the residents' side, but the lakes and the roads,
right,
and so forth.
Essentially, they can tax or impose fees on all the residents, right?
Yes, there's two. From my understanding, there's two fees. You're paying off a bond that the CDD holds, and then you're paying for maintenance and operation.
And so is there
Of the road?
Well, anything. Any of these shared resources, right?
Yeah.
And so I knew that they needed this co-applicant from the environmental aspect, but recently, from documents that we're seeing, that CDD manages from our understanding, the operation and maintenance. And within many of the documents that I'm seeing from Sarasota National and the CDD, that quite possibly those fees will be put on the residents of Sarasota National.
Okay.
I'm not an attorney, but from what I see and the language that's used, I would be up in arms, because Sarasota National has said that they don't want a direct access to Manasota Beach Road. So I'm not sure what the payoff is
so
here.
They don't want the access, but they could end up paying for a significant portion.
Exactly. They want access to their irrigation lake, and that's very important.
Okay.
But they know with another access to Manasota Beach Road, that could bring in a bunch of other concerns. So
who makes the decisions for the CDD? How is that?
They have their own board.
Okay, and is the board consisting of residents or the developers, or who controls the board, I guess, is a impolite way to state it.
Yeah, I believe they're residents.
Okay.
Yes.
So presumably you could take the residents out to dinner and explain all this to them, and they might come up with a different position.
I probably won't do that.
Oh.
But we're encouraging the residents and the homeowners to really take fast action, because the signature that we see as the co-applicant, there were never, from what we can tell, there's never been a board meeting, and this acts as a quasi-government, and there has to be a board meeting and explaining why they want to sign on as a co-applicant, because they're taking on that responsibility, and the language that's in Swift Mud, they're taking on the operation and maintenance.
I wonder also if they're taking on any liability.
You wonder.
Yeah.
I'm trying to explain this on our Facebook page to residents to pay attention.
Uh-huh.
Like, we realize that most of them don't want the road, but there could be quite a lot of impacts that they are not realizing.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things you mentioned early on is this, the potential for changing the drainage and increasing flooding on one side or the other. And to put in a road like that, particularly in a floodplain of Forked Creek, this would either need to be bridged, essentially on piling, so the water could flow under it, which would be pretty expensive, or else it's going to be a causeway or berm elevated to go through. The point is, they're not going to run a road at grade through a floodplain.
They are not going to run the road at grade, for sure.
Right. So this is going to be, trying to get it right in terms of the flow from one side to the other is a very problematic engineering thing. I'm sure Stantec will tell you they do it all the time, but there are plenty of instances we've seen where either intentionally or unintentionally, changing the elevation of land in one area changes the flooding in adjacent properties.
Yeah, I mean, we have the Fort Creek, we have Gottfried Creek, we have the Fort Creek floodplain, the Lemon Bay watershed. To think that all of this is not impacted by this massive development is just beyond me. I really don't think people can do simple math anymore. So we really want to stress that, hoping that the ALJ will give us the opportunity. And because just when Beachwalk went in, they put in a 10-foot berm and an 8-foot wall behind all the properties on the dirt road.
Whoa.
So,
where's that water go? Yeah.
Exactly.
So you used a term that I did not know a year ago, which is ALJ. And ALJ is an administrative law judge. And so you're initiating a legal challenge, but it's not in a traditional court where there's a jury. It's before a judge, an administrative law judge. And you're going through this process of discovery, which is asking the other side for certain documents and information, and are they Are they sending you interrogatories as well?
They have. They've sent interrogatories and requests for information.
Okay.
I think they wanted to make sure I didn't have a good 4th of July weekend, but that didn't happen.
Yeah. So now you're, what happens next in your legal challenge? Where are you in that?
So we have a motion to dismiss from David Pierce, the county's attorney, and then also from the Economic Stimulus Working Group's attorneys, because they've joined on, of course.
Okay.
And so at this point, for whatever reason, the judge has requested a hearing to review the motion to dismiss, and that will be July 16th at 2 p.m.
Okay.
On a Zoom call, which is open to the public to view, of course.
Mm-hmm. And do you, does your neighbors have an attorney?
We have an attorney. We are being very cautious of what items they're tackling.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, so the county's attorney is introduced, filed with the ALJ, the administrative law judge, a motion to dismiss, which is basically asking the judge to rule that you have no valid claim and there's no reason to actually go to a hearing because there's nothing, there's no legal basis for your challenge, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, and so that's coming up soon. You've got to... You're getting all your arguments together, and
fun.
Yeah.
So, tell us the name of your Facebook group.
It is Oppose Minnesota Beach Road, and road is RD.
Okay. Oppose Minnesota Beach Road. So, is that the best place? If people wanted more information about your efforts, is the Facebook group the best place to start?
Yes, we have a calendar of events. So we post different commissioners' meetings and things that, you know, our own events and our petition, our GoFundMe, all the information is there.
So this is a thorny question. If the county is moving to dismiss, were they directed to do that by the county commission?
I cannot speak for the county commission.
I understand, but it would seem like, I don't know either, but it would seem like the attorney should not be running around filing things without direction from the county commission or at the very least, the county administrator.
Right. Well, we could ask him on Wednesday.
Yeah. Yikes.
I did want to say one thing regarding the CDD, and Sarasota National, it's the stormwater maintenance, right?
Uh-huh.
It's the stormwater facilities maintenance,
mm-hmm.
and that's part of the piece of responsibility. So I don't know if I clarified that.
That's good. Thank you. So the City of Sarasota invites the public to celebrate Park and Recreation Month this July with a series of family-friendly events on three different Fridays in July. Programs include a field day at the Robert L. Taylor Community Complex, an outdoor fun day at Payne Park Amphitheater, and chalk activity day at Arlington Park and Aquatic Complex. The schedule of casual drop-in events is designed to encourage movement and imagination. For more information, including the dates and hours, is available at sarasotafl.gov.
So, Kelly, tell us about the timeline.
The timeline of the project?
Yeah.
So the documents that were presented say that the engineering would be done sometime December 2026.
Mm-hmm.
But there has been talk along the way for an expedited construction. We have emails that state that they want the road done before the school, which that's not going to happen. And then the developer has said twice on the to some media outlets would begin construction March 2026 and then April 2026, and
Yeah, we're getting a call in, but we're not really trained to handle call-ins at this moment. So I guess maybe, I don't know if people could send a text to the station or we're just not geared up for that right now. Something we'll have to add to our show.
So I think the intent is to be done by 2027.
Okay. And so it sort of sounds like the county plowed into this on the advice of Pat Neal and others. They did not do an appropriate job in contacting affected parties all along the route. And so now when you go and speak at the commission meetings, do you get any sense of remorse or indication that they might want to rethink some of these decisions?
Twice Commissioner Smith has spoken up at board meetings.
Okay.
Of course, he needs a second.
Yes.
And apparently, Commissioner Knight twice had the opportunity to back him and say, maybe let's take a pause and and really do a better job. I mean, thinking about it, you only had 14 days to review and approve. And this is a mess of a project.
Yeah.
And there's ERPs that are stacked upon ERPs and permits relying on old permits.
Yeah.
And we're going from Northport to Sarasota County, or to Englewood.
Yeah.
You know?
And they're... And the whole ownership of the land seems to be in question.
It is for us.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but let's be, it's not just Commissioner Knight. Any of the other commissioners could have seconded it. Even, you know, as a courtesy, it's nice when you make a motion if someone says, well, I'm not sure I agree with you, but I'll second it and then we can have a discussion about it. So it's a very lonely feeling when you make a motion and none of your peers will even allow you to talk about it. So,
agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Commissioner Smith has visited the neighborhood?
Yes, he came out, I guess it was last month, to take a tour down the road. And we had a road rally and we greeted him and showed him the area and... you know, I feel like he's been a bit of a straight shooter with us.
Yeah.
A bit more common sense. And, I mean, honestly, they don't need the road.
Yeah. if people are curious, you should drive down 776 and turn east on East Minnesota Road, and it's paved. And then there's this tiny little section that has a median, right? And then it turns into dirt, and then it just sort of fizzles out, and there's a turnaround. There's sort of a loop, so you don't have to back up. but then there's a really big stretch that from there to where that roundabout is in Welland Park, that's undeveloped, and there is no road. And I don't even know if there's a footpath that you could walk.
No, there's not.
Right. So we're talking about some significant land clearing of areas that aren't currently cleared. And this is in the Forked Creek basin, clearly, and probably the floodplain as well.
And the wildlife. I know we didn't spend much time on that, but the gopher tortoises, I mean, pretty much everything that Florida offers is there. I mean, people have spotted the panther. We've had 17 reports. I know people can mistake them.
Yes.
I haven't seen it myself.
Yeah. And you have to have a photo or otherwise people are not convinced. Yeah.
Yes.
Now, a photo work, also a good plaster cast of a footprint, if that can be documented. We had a New College student that found a panther footprint set on the Carlton Reserve, I believe, and those were validated. So, there's just too many people that see bobcats and report them as panthers.
Understood.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you're in a neighborhood where people have goats, you would know if there were panthers. they apparently like goats.
So let's talk about natural habitats for wildlife.
Well, that whole area, you know, we have the scrub preserve on the west side of 776.
Minnesota Scrub Preserve, one of our first acquisitions, yeah.
Yeah. So that's to the west, of course, but on our side, I mean, we have on the property next to us, that actually has over 17 gopher burrows.
Yeah.
There's at least four or five across from us. We have some on our property. So there's just so many gopher tortoises that will be impacted. And further down toward Sarasota National, there is a gopher preserve back there, but the road has to be within, I don't know if it's 25 or 75 feet. It meets that criteria, but we know they traverse.
Yeah. They're also, my understanding, and I'm not an expert on this, but tortoises and turtles in general have pretty good homing instincts. And if you move them, they will try to go back to where they came from to a certain extent. So, yeah. Well, it's quite a challenge. So in addition to your Facebook page, you also have a GoFundMe going on?
We have a GoFundMe, and then we have a petition, and we just keep updating that, you know, on our Facebook page. We encourage people to come out. We do different events. We do rallies. I don't really like to call them protests.
Yeah, yeah.
We do rallies at 776 and Minnesota Beach Road. We do car rallies, various things. We did a comedian event, which was a great turnout, really good turnout.
So when you go east, there's a place, a business, Lee's Trees, is that right?
That's the property that we purchased.
Okay. All right. And then, but when you get to the end of the road and there's a turnaround, who owns that property? Do you have any idea?
Yes, I do. Okay. That would be Bill Merrill and Bo Medred.
Oh, okay.
So that's about just over 25 acres.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Shocker.
Well, so they may not be planning a preserve.
Not at that end.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's clearly a hot topic in South County, and we thought it was important to have somebody come up and explain to us North County people what is going on down there. Why are we keep hearing about Minnesota Beach Road, and does it exist or not exist? So thanks again for joining us, Kelly.
Yes, of course. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to our Changing Environment on listener-sponsored WSLR LP Radio 96.5 FM, broadcasting from our downtown Sarasota studios on Kumquat Court. You can also hear a show on WBPV LP Radio 100.1 Bradenton or listen online.
Today's show, number 91, was recorded on July 7th, 2026, and featured Kelly Bauman talking about the proposed extension and widening of Minnesota Beach Road.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or volunteers.
Previous shows of our Changing Environment may be accessed at the WSLR archives. Go to archive.wslr.org.
If you'd like to be notified about upcoming shows, you can join the Facebook group, Our Changing Environment.
Tune in at 9 next week for the Healthy Living Hour with Dr. Rebecca Acosta.
And tune in at 9 a.m. 2 weeks from today on July 21st for the next episode of Our Changing Environment, broadcasting from the WSLR studio.
If you're interested in local public affairs, tune in every Thursday at 9 a.m. for The Detail, hosted by Kathy Antunes.
And don't forget to check out the live music, public affairs, and other special events at Fogartyville.